Hi all. Thanks for coming. How's your DragonCon going so far? Great. And we got lots more to go yet. I'm excited. I always love DragonCon. A lot of my talk. Hi, I'm Ilanka. I'm going to be talking about one of the world's most famous unsolved goats. It's a Kryptos, a sculpture at the center of CIA headquarters. And I'm always excited to give this talk at DragonCon because DragonCon really gave me my launch into cryptography. I would not be a Kryptos expert if it were not for DragonCon. So I'll be talking about that here. You guys are my homies, so I'm really pleased to be here. How many of you have seen my Kryptos talk before? Just a few. So thank you for coming back. I'm always pleased to have return visitors here. So let me see, where do I start? I got involved with public cryptography. In fact, my book here would not be here if it were not for DragonCon. It all comes back here. My day job is that I make computer games. And I was here at DragonCon several years ago talking about games here in this track, not in this room. It was in a different room at the time. But because I was one of the speakers in the track, I got to meet other speakers in the track, such as the hackers that were coming in and speaking about computer security. And through them, I heard about this code called the Freaknik 3 code, which had been released at a hacker convention in Nashville. It was a challenge to the attendees of the conference. But it hadn't been cracked, so it had been a year. So the hackers were here at DragonCon, and they were handing out the flyer along with all the other flyers that you see around the con. And I picked it up, and I took it home to St. Louis. And one weekend, I picked it up, and I just got obsessed with it. And I cracked the code. Took me about 10 days to crack it, but I cracked it and I won the prizes, which free trip to a HackerCon, free hotel and drinks and t-shirts and all that. And then I went around cracking a bunch of other codes in the hacker scene because I found I enjoyed it. I actually cracked so many I was actually banned from competition cracking these codes at the AtlantaCon, a different hacker convention called AtlantaCon. At the AtlantaCon convention, they released a code, and it was on a sheet of paper. At the bottom of the sheet of paper, it said, "Note, past puzzle crackers are ineligible for prizes associated with solving the AtlantaCon puzzle. Give someone else a chance at Ilanka." And so I cracked that one, too. And through these codes, I heard about, in the Freaknik 3 code, there were several dead ends in that code, and one of them was saying, "Okay, now go solve this." And it was pointing to information about this Kryptos sculpture. So that was really the first place that I heard about Kryptos. It has four ciphers on it. Three of the four have been solved. The fourth has not been solved yet, considered one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. And it's really changed my life, being interested in Kryptos. You can't hear me in the back, or? Okay. I'm going to keep talking. Okay. Shall I repeat anything? Were there any? Okay. Things I'm going to be doing in this talk, I'll go over what are the three known parts of Kryptos and how they can be solved. I'll talk about a related sculpture to Kryptos, also created by the same artist, Jim Sanborn, and we put together a team that cracked that one as well. We'll talk about what it says. I'll give you some speculations, and I'll also be talking about Kryptos in pop culture. Dan Brown, who wrote a book called The Da Vinci Code. How many people have read this book? Okay. Did you know that in the artwork of the book jacket, there are puzzles hidden in the artwork? And they give clues to the subject of his next novel, which is actually out now, The Lost Symbol. But two of the puzzles that are in the artwork of The Da Vinci Code refer to Kryptos. And Dan Brown actually contacted me because Kryptos features a part in this novel, The Lost Symbol, which takes place in Washington, D.C., and I helped him with the research for the novel, and he actually named a character after me in the novel. So how many people have read The Lost Symbol? If you remember the character Nola Kay, she's the CIA analyst, and Nola Kay is a scrambled version of Ilanka, and that's what Dan Brown does. Like, his editor's name is Jason Kaufman, so in the book there's an editor named Jonas Falkman. He just changes the names around a little bit. And big question for me now is, they're making a movie based on The Lost Symbol, and so I've been, emailing and texting Dan Brown and saying, so is my character, Nola Kay, is she going to be in the movie? And he says he doesn't know yet, and I said, well, if she is, do I get to pick who plays me in the movie? And he said, well, I don't know. And I said, well, if I can pick, I want to be played by Angelina Jolie. And he said, well, it's possible. We'll see what we can do. So we'll see how that goes. I'll just be happy if Nola Kay is even mentioned in the movie. We'll see. I'll also be showing you a short video clip from the Nova Science Now program on PBS, which is about Kryptos, and I was interviewed for that one as well. This is a real quick the Freaknik 3 code that this was the flyer that I picked up here at Dragon Con those years ago. I picked it up in 2000. It had been released in 1999. Yeah. And then after I cracked the Freaknik 3 code, I wrote this tutorial about how I'd done it. And it's written in a kind of a tongue-in-cheek cyberpunk style. It's also a tutorial in cryptography. So if you're interested in learning more about codes, I recommend it. It used to be on my AOL site back when that was what you did, is you had AOL websites, but now AOL is gone, and so now I have it mirrored at Elonka.com, and if you go there, you can find it. And I've also hidden a lot of puzzles inside the tutorial. Most of them have been found, but not all of them have been found yet. I'm kind of curious to see if people go, oh, I just saw that. That was really cool. And as I was working on the Freaknik 3 code, that's when I learned about cryptos. This is a sculpture. It's in the central courtyard of CIA. I'll be showing you more pictures of it. It's about 12 feet tall. It's about 20 feet long. It has letters on these plates, these copper bronze plates, that are actually carved through the metal. So you're actually looking through the sculpture. It's kind of transparent, so you can see the trees that are on the other side. And of the four panels, two of them are what's called a visionaire tableau. It's a cryptographic system named after Blaise de Visionnaire, even though he wasn't actually the one that invented it. And then the other two panels have the four parts of cryptos, and I'll show you more details on those. So I was lucky enough to actually visit CIA. It's a long story of how I got in. Where do I start? September 11th. The tragedy of September 11th, and I have a cousin in Washington, D.C., who was had a very close call that morning. He was actually on his way to the Pentagon that morning. He was going to be giving a briefing, and he was running late because he was having printer problems. And then he got the problem squared away, and then he was heading for the briefing, and he was checking his cell phone messages. His cell phone actually crashed because there were so many people that had called and left messages saying, a plane just hit the Pentagon, don't go. And the plane actually hit right where he was supposed to be. So some of the people he was supposed to brief were killed. And I was, you know, I was horrified by that and everything else going on with September 11th. I realize now we're coming up on the 10-year anniversary. So I flew out to D.C. shortly after that to hug my cousin. I was very glad that he was okay. And we went to a memorial at the Pentagon, and we laid a pin of an American flag there. And then we're driving around, and he says, okay, well, you know, as long as you're here in D.C., is there anything else you'd like to see? There's lots of tourist attractions here. And I said, well, really, you're the main reason I'm here. I really don't care what else I see. And he says, okay, that's nice. I like seeing you too. But is there anything else you'd like to see? And I thought, well, you know, there's this Cryptos sculpture I've heard about. I don't know that much about it. I've never tried to crack the codes on it, but I heard about it from the Freaknik code. Maybe we could go see it. And he said, okay, sure. Well, where is it? And I'm like, well, it's at the center of CIA. And he goes, okay, CIA, they're in Langley. And then we kind of ran into a roadblock because there's no real street address for Langley, for CIA. You can't just go type it in to MapQuest or something in directions to CIA. It just wasn't there. And I tried all kinds of ways to Google it and couldn't find it, but I wasn't going to let that stop me. So I sort of knew what the building looked like because I'd seen like Tom Clancy movies that had like overhead views, you know, CIA. And so I got some satellite reconnaissance pictures of Langley, Virginia, and I went looking for the outline of the building until I could find it. And these days you could just do it on Google Earth, but this was all pre-Google Earth. So we found out where the CIA was, and my cousin and I decided we were going to go drive by there, and we took the highway and we took the exit. We figured we're just going to like drive around the service road and kind of scope out what's there. But when you take that exit, there's no service road. You're just there at the gate to CIA. Big gate, barbed wire, guard shack, big guys with guns come pouring out asking very reasonable questions, considering this is right after September 11th. Who are you and why are you here? And we're like, oh, well, we want to see crypto. So the guards kind of relaxed, and they said, sorry, you can't get in. It's official business only. And then I was saying, can I talk my way into CIA? And so I'm saying, well, you know, but I'm here and I'm a researcher, and no, I'm sorry, official business only. I'm like, could I get an official invitation from my congressperson to get in? And no, official. Is there a public tour day? No, official business only. And kind of ran out of ideas. And like I said, big guys with guns, you know. Finally said, okay, sorry. And we drove away, and I'm thinking, like, official business. And along another thing in part of my life at that time was I was helping out with the war on terrorism, because I'd thought about all this cryptography experience that I had from the hacker scene, and I'd contacted my local FBI and I said, hey, can I help out with the war on terrorism? Is there anything to do with Al-Qaeda that I could, you know, help out or anything? And the FBI said no. And then I called back the next week and I said, hey, can I help out? And they said no. And I kept calling back. And finally I got an agent. He said, well, what is it you know about? And I said, well, steganography and cryptography and all these things. And one of this type of cryptography that I mentioned called steganography, he said, you know, we've been hearing rumors that Al-Qaeda might have been using steganography as a way of planning the September 11th attacks. Steganography is a way of hiding pictures or hiding messages inside of pictures on the internet. So the St. Louis FBI said, you know, cryptography really isn't our mission here. It's mostly done in D.C., but maybe you could come into the St. Louis office and give a talk about what steganography is. And so I said, sure, and I put together this big presentation about steganography, what it was, and I don't believe that Al-Qaeda was using steganography, but I found out what kind of codes that they were using and was present in information about that, and also talking about how the rumors about steganography got started. And this is a whole other sidetrack, but while I was putting together this talk on steganography, I was saying, maybe I can use this talk as the official business that'll let me get into CIA so that I can go see crypto. So, but I was saying, how do I get an invitation to CIA with the steganography talk? So I put into my steganography talk some slides that showed here's a picture without something hidden in it, and here's a picture with something hidden in it. And the picture, I could have chosen any picture of a mountain or a flower, but I chose a picture of cryptos that I downloaded from the CIA website, and I said, here's the picture without something, here with something, you can't see it with the naked eye. But every time I would show this slide when I was giving the talk, I would say, boy, I'd love to give this talk at CIA someday. Boy, I'd love to give this talk at CIA someday. And the talk was a good talk, and so I gave it to the FBI and the Secret Service and customs agents, postal inspectors, and also at hacker cons. So there's this big hacker con called DEF CON, takes place in Las Vegas, right? And it's the DEF CON after September 11th. Hackers are as enraged by what happened at September 11th as everyone else is. And I mentioned, hey, I got this talk on steganography, and I was chosen as an alternate speaker. And I gave the talk, and I was terrified. My heart's pounding, because at DEF CON, if you don't give a good talk, they're not going to politely, you know, clap. They're going to boo you right off the stage. So, but I gave the talk, and it was well received. And as I was giving the talk, I showed my slide, and I said, oh, by the way, I'd love to give this talk at CIA someday. So after the talk, someone comes up, people come up, they give you business cards and stuff, but after the talk, someone came up to the podium and they leaned across the podium and they looked at me and they looked me in the eye and they said, I work at Langley. I think I can get you in. So here was an undercover CIA agent at DEF CON, a hacker con, who saw me give the talk, who was going to invite me to CIA. I'm like, score. And all they gave me was a first name and a phone number. And then I was saying, okay, was this really someone from CIA, or was this a hacker who was pulling my chain, saying that they were from CIA? And after DEF CON, I called the number, and they said, okay, hi, we loved your talk, we want you to come to CIA and give the talk. And I said, okay, well, you have to prove that you're from CIA. And they said, well, how can we prove we're from CIA? And I said, well, send me an email from an official CIA address. And they said, well, we don't have an email from an official CIA address. And I said, well, get an email from an official CIA address. So a few days go by, and I get an email, and it's from someone at ucia.gov, unclassifiedcia.gov. And then I wrote back to the address to make sure it wasn't a spoofed email, and we had two-way communication, and it all worked out. And I was invited to CIA, and I told them I didn't want to be paid. They insisted I had to be paid. I told them, don't pay me, I just want time to look at cryptos. I will come and speak for free as long as I get time to see at cryptos. And they said, we cannot do that, we have to pay you. And I said, okay, we'll reimburse my airfare or whatever, you know, I'm staying with my cousin, I don't need hotel. And finally they came back and said, okay, we want you to come speak and we're going to pay you $2,500, okay? And I'm like, okay, fine. And so that was me negotiating with the government for our tax money. So I got in and I was able to do some rubbings of the sculpture. Each of these is done on an 8.5 by 11 inch piece of paper, kind of giving you an idea of the size of the letters. And let me show you the video now. So let's see if I can get that working here. This is about 10 minutes long.
Most good spy stories have a secret message, usually in code. But a master spy can always crack it. Today, code breaking involves complex mathematics and relies on powerful algorithms. But even with the best technology, there's one coded message no one has been able to crack. It's 10 feet tall and sitting in plain view in the backyard of the CIA. Correspondent Cohen, Chad Cohen, is on the case.
Of all the secrets hidden at the highly secured CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, you may be looking at one of the strangest. Meet Kryptos. It's a copper monolith inscribed with nearly 2,000 very random-looking characters. But there's a message here, if you can break the code. And despite countless attempts since Kryptos' 1989 installation, that has yet to be done.
Now, you're the Central Intelligence Agency, right? You're supposed to be very intelligent. Everybody there is intelligent, right? You don't have anything pulled over your eyes.
Well, that's at least what we all like to believe. But with Kryptos, that's exactly what Jim Sanborn has done. And he is not the world's most sophisticated cryptographer. In fact, Sanborn is not a cryptographer at all. The mastermind behind Kryptos is an artist, if an unconventional one. His workspace looks more science lab than art studio.
I work with lodestones, compasses, you know, the Earth's magnetic field, the Coriolis force. These were natural forces that were invisible. Those kinds of things fascinated me, and I set about to try to make those things visible for people.
When the CIA was looking for a sculpture to grace the courtyard of their new headquarters building, Sanborn wanted to design something that would stay invisible. A secret code. So how does an artist craft a message that the best code breakers in the world can't crack?
I set the codes up for him, which means he didn't have to know the mathematics of it.
Sanborn found help in the former chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center, Ed Shai, who gave Jim a crash course in Cryptography 101.
Classical cryptography, and it's been defined this way, includes substitution and includes transposition.
For substitution, take one letter or word and swap it for another. Transposition, keep the letters the same, just systematically mix them up. Pretty straightforward tricks, and yet they've been stumping would-be codebreakers for thousands of years. Julius Caesar came up with a system based on substitution to send secret messages to his generals on the battlefield. It's called the Caesar cipher.
A letter is substituted with another letter.
By laying two alphabets on top of each other and shifting one of them over a set number of places, you get a whole new alphabet. The word film in this case now becomes ILOP, complete gobbledygook if intercepted by an enemy. But if you know how many spaces to shift the alphabet over, it's clear as day. The codes have gotten more complicated through the ages. Nazi Germany's Enigma machine, for example, which Hitler used successfully for years before Allied codebreakers cracked it, employed a mechanical rotor system, but ultimately, it just created elaborate substitutions. Transposition ciphers have their place in history, too. To send secret messages to his army, General Ulysses S. Grant didn't substitute letters. He just carefully mixed them all up. Sanborn also employed this technique in Kryptos, using pen and paper.
So this is the plain text. This is the way it's written out in English.
By writing the message on a grid and transposing it to different positions on a new grid, it becomes unreadable to someone trying to intercept it. And the more times you do it, the more complex it can get.
So it can get very complicated.
Very quickly, it seems.
Very quickly.
Complicated maybe to a code breaker, but it's very simple to the intended recipient. If the code is meant for you, you don't have to break it. Because when two parties want to communicate via cipher, they agree ahead of time on the specific rules of the system. With transposition, you might agree on how many rows you'd use or how many times the chart is flipped. With substitution, you might agree on how many spaces to offset the alphabet. To make Kryptos, Sanborn took both these techniques, used them to encode four distinct messages, and cut them into copper.
Every letter was cut out with a jigsaw, and took 2.5 years of cutting to do it.
Secure as the CIA may be, It wasn't long before cryptos went mainstream. Through internet message boards, websites, hacker conventions, cryptos has become a phenomenon.
We have a group of about 1,000 people around the world that are brainstorming this very, very heavily.
Alanka Dunnan, whose website has had millions of hits from would-be crackers, is generally considered to be the leading cryptos expert in the world. Even Sanborn says so. But she's only seen the sculpture up close once.
Well, because we can't get in to see cryptos at CIA because it's at the center of CIA.
So Alanka took me here, to the Hirshhorn Museum in Washington, D.C., to see a similar Sanborn piece called Antipodes.
So this is the next best thing. The order of the letters is identical. The punctuation is the same. Part one starts here, where it says E-M-U-F-P, decrypts to the letters B-E-T-W-E-E-N.
Between? Since when does imufpus resemble anything like the word between? Well, since parts 1, 2, and 3 of cryptos were cracked in 1999.
It all looks like pretty much garbage to the untrained eye.
And here's the guy who did it, LA computer scientist Jim Galugli.
Part of the reason that it's developed a cult following is that I was able to crack it and expose it to the world. So people are able to say, look, some of it really is solvable. It's not just a mass of garbage letters.
Galugli's programs combine algorithms with rules of thumb for English grammar and spelling. The computer tries millions of different character combinations and throws away the ones that look like nonsense. He's cracked many codes in his life, but he always starts the same way, with what's called a frequency count.
Simply put, he counts. He counts up all the letters in the text and sees how often each one occurs. That works, because in any language, certain letters always show up more often than others. Whether it's a cookbook, a flight manual, or a page from Hamlet, the frequency of each letter will always stay about the same.
So in English, on average, of all the letters in any given bit of text, E's make up over 12%, while Q's occur much less frequently, less than 0.2%. When Galugli studied the first two parts of cryptos, he noticed there were just as many Q's as there were E's. It was a tip-off that they were probably standing in for, or substituting for, more common letters. Galugli ran his program on it.
Okay, so you type this stuff in. You typed in that code, and boom, this came out.
This came out.
But as the solution for parts 1 and 2 came out on Jim Galugli's screen, the mystery just got deeper.
Between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. It was totally invisible.
How's that possible? They used the Earth's magnetic field. The information was gathered and transmitted underground
to an unknown location. This was his last message.
So another one to scratch your head.
Yes,
right?
There's a lot of hmms here. Definitely.
There was nothing to help reveal the meaning of the sculpture. Just the ambiguous words of Jim Sanborn. Not that it mattered to the man who actually cracked it.
For myself personally, I don't care quite so much about what was being hidden as to how it was hidden.
Galugli quickly discovered that part 3 of cryptos was hidden in a radically different way. This one had lots of E's and only one Q, just like it would be in English.
I could tell that it was a transposition cipher because the frequency of the letters was identical to the frequency in English.
Remember what Sanborn was doing in his studio? The transposition he did with that graph paper? Galugli created a computer program that undid it. And eventually, he cracked part 3 of cryptos as well. This section was recognizable, taken right out of archaeologist Howard Carter's notebook, describing the moment he first opened King Tut's tomb.
Slowly, slowly, desperately slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed.
And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist.
Diary excerpts from famous explorers, mysterious allusions to light and dark. Even when Sanborn's words are put in the right order, they are cryptic, to say the least.
Between subtle shadings and the Howard Carter, I mean, what does it mean?
Well, they all tend to have a common theme of things hidden, things underground, things concealed from sight. So that theme may be something that is going to give us a clue towards part 4.
Part 4 is made up of the final 98 letters on the sculpture. And only by breaking that last piece will the true message of Kryptos be revealed. But so far, it has proven impervious to all the techniques of would-be codebreakers.
Part four is hard, well, number one, because it's very short. It's only 97 or 98 characters. When cryptanalysts are working on a code, we generally have large amounts of ciphertext to work with. Then you're able to look for the very subtle mathematical patterns, which is what takes a code apart.
Is it something really simple that people are missing?
No, maybe not. Maybe not.
And he may have had one more trick up his sleeve, something called concealment.
It could be a matter of obfuscating the language before starting to encrypt.
Ed Scheidt has said that he used a little bit of concealment on part four, but we don't know what that means.
A message can be concealed in various ways before enciphering it, to make it even harder to break.
The first challenge then is, well, what masking technique was used.
Techniques like removing all the vowels first or spelling the message phonetically can radically undermine the code-breaking methods. So it may still be a long time before anyone experiences the thrill of cracking all of Kryptos. Even Ed, who taught Jim how to make code, doesn't know the solution, which makes Jim Sanborn the only person on Earth who does. And he isn't dropping any hints.
It wouldn't help to just kind of get it out.
Unburden myself?
Lighten your load.
No. I mean, I really like your program, but I'm sorry.
Okay. So, lights, please. Thank you. So, how I got from those rubbings to actually being on a program of Nova was that when I got back to St. Louis, I brought the rubbings with me, and charcoal rubbings, they make a mess in the suitcase, trust me. But I decided, well, maybe someone else might be interested in this information. By the way, we have more chairs in the front if anybody in the back wants to come in. So I had these rubbings, so I made this little one page, you know, just kind of like an early blog, Ilanka's visit to CIA. And then I thought, if anybody wants to see the rubbings, here they are. And then I started getting these emails from people, because now I had a website about Kryptos, and everybody was writing to me because they thought that I was like an authority on it, even though I just kind of talked my way into CIA that one time. But they'd ask me questions like, well, has the artist ever made any other sculptures with encryption on them? What else has he done? And so I'm a helpful person. I made an FAQ. I started posting more information on my website. And then people kept asking me about his other art, so I contacted Sanborn's agent, and I said, can you send me a list of everything Sanborn's ever done? And the agent said, no. And I said, well, why not? And they said, well, because he's done too many things. He's done many, many works in many countries. It would be impossible for anyone to make a list of everything Sanborn's ever done. So I'm like, okay, I'll start compiling a list of everything Sanborn's ever done. And I started writing to, like, any art gallery where he'd done a show, and I'd say, hi, I'm a researcher. Was there a program from when Sanborn was there for your show? And normally they have extra programs that they'll send off to researchers. And in the program it would say, Sanborn, who's doing this show, also did these other pieces or did these other shows at these other locations. And then I'd write to those locations, and people just started sending me stuff. And I called my apartment Smithsonian West, because I was just getting stacks and stacks of programs from art galleries and folders of information from other people who were doing research on art in Washington, D.C. area. I wrote to the Smithsonian and I said, hey, do you have anything on Sanborn? And they said yes, and they sent me a bunch of folders. I had to pay for copying fees, but they sent me those folders. And then I was going through these copies of information that they had about Sanborn stuff, and I pulled out a document, which was very unusual because it was all in Russian. And I can't read Russian well, but I can read the Cyrillic alphabet a little bit, and I could tell that it said at the top, it said, in red, it said secret. I was holding a classified document from the KGB that somehow had found its way into the folders at the Smithsonian, and it had something to do with Sanborn, and I was kind of baffled, and I immediately called my contact at the FBI, and I said, I'm holding a classified document in my hands. I probably shouldn't be doing this. And he was asking me questions. He said, what do you mean you're holding a classified document? I said, well, you know, it's in Russian. He says, you're holding a classified document in Russian? And I said, yeah, and they said it's from the KGB, and he said, oh, it's a KGB classified document. I'm like, yeah. And he says, well, that's okay. We don't care if you have a classified document from some other country. If you had a classified document from the United States, then we might worry. And I'm like, oh, okay. So, and you know, I just filed away and went on with my research. And eventually I get a phone call I'm adding this information to my website. I'm expanding the FAQ. People are writing. The late Gary Warzen, who was also interested in cryptos, he wrote to me with some ideas. We corresponded back and forth, and he said, let's start a discussion group about cryptos. So I'm like, okay, and we started the Cryptos Yahoo group, and then just people started just pouring into the group. It currently has, it was 1,000 members at the time that this was made. I think it's over 2,000 members now of people around the world that are all just interested in cryptos. And anyone who wants can join the group and kind of follow the discussion. So it just kept growing and growing from there. And then someone contacted me and said, hey, would you like to submit some codes for a book that we're writing? And I said, okay, sure. And then they said, well, we really want a lot of codes. Maybe you could contact some of your friends. Then they could write codes for the book. I'm like, okay. And then they said, well, can you just be like the editor for the chapter on hard codes? I'm like, time out. Are you guys paying me for this or not? And they came back and said, well, we'll pay you, but we actually want you to write the entire book. And so I said no, and they were persistent, and that eventually turned into the mammoth book of secret codes and cryptograms, which has about 600 ciphers that you can solve, and there's also a section on famous unsolved codes such as cryptos. And around then also, Dan Brown, the movie for the Da Vinci Code was coming out, and so this whole cryptos phenomenon just kept growing and growing, and then Nova's doing a documentary on it, and I'm giving talks on it at cons and coming back to Dragon Con and giving a talk about cryptos, which I all heard about because of that Freaknik code that I picked up here many years ago here at Dragon Con. So let me go back to more information about cryptos here. Do this. Okay, so as I was researching the other works that Sanborn had done, I found out that after he'd created Cryptos, he created another piece, which he called the Untitled Cryptos piece. And he'd sold this to a private collector. And I tracked down the current location. It's in the backyard of a dot-com millionaire in California. And when I was in Los Angeles, I called him up and I said, hi, I'm Ilanka, and I'm a researcher. Can I come into your home, into your backyard, and take pictures of your sculptures? And he said, yeah. And so I got to go in and I got to look at this. And it has... It's a smaller version of what you saw in the video at the Hirshhorn Museum of Antipodes, and it has this English Latin text on one side, and it has Russian Cyrillic text on the other side. And the text is very similar to Cryptos, but there's a few differences. So this is the piece that was in the backyard. This is the piece that's at the Hirshhorn Museum. And the Russian is also duplicated on another sculpture of Sanborn's, which is called the Cyrillic Projector. This is at the University of North Carolina in Charlotte. And so the English side on the Untitled Cryptos piece has a few differences. Well, one is there's the visionaire tableaus have these diagonals, and then the first part of the ciphertext starts E-N-D-Y-A-H-R, which is not the part one of Cryptos. It's actually part three of Cryptos. The part one of Cryptos starts at the E-M-U-F-P-H-D. So we don't know why he put these things in a different order on this piece, but it's possible that this piece has a clue which would help us towards solving Cryptos. Another thing I noticed when I was looking at the Untitled Cryptos piece is that there were two extra dots, and they're right about here, and blowing up here, and you see these two dots. And these appear, the text, the ZBSFD, this is the same as what's on Cryptos, but on this Untitled piece we have these two dots. Why did he put dots there and not on Cryptos? We don't know. We don't know if it's a clue, if it's just something artistic that he was doing. I'll talk a bit more about what the actual plain text says in that spot. If the dots were to be seen on Cryptos, they would be in this area and in the K2 section. So how was this encrypted? Well, there was a cipher alphabet that was created. And one way to make a cipher alphabet is you take A through Z, and then you pull out the letters of a keyword. In this case, the keyword is the word cryptos. So you take those letters, you put them at the front, and then you mash all the other letters over on the other side, and you end up with, you still have a 26-letter alphabet, it's just scrambled according to a specific key. And in this case, the key was the word cryptos. Now, and then if you take that, and then you put it into a grid where you take that crypto cipher alphabet, and then underneath it you put another one where it's just shifted to the left by one, and then the next shifted and shifted and shifted. So you get these nice diagonals going down. You see the M's and the N's and the Q's because everything's shifted by one. Also notice that you can read the word cryptos here on the top line, and if you read down the first column, you can also see the word cryptos, because we've shifted each thing by one. Now imagine that you're using something with two keys, so that you have the word cryptos that you're reading in the top line, but a different word that's going to be spelled down the left-hand column. And then that's a two-keyword visionaire system, and that's what Sanborn used, where the second key was the word palimpsest. So you find the P in the next alphabet, and you put in the left column, and then you find the A. And you end up with a tableau, which is, it looks sort of like scrambled letters, but as long as you know what those two key words are, you can easily recreate it, which is one of the elements of a good code. Palimpsest, or palimpsest, I think I'm always mispronouncing it, palimpsest, is a word that means a scroll that has had, like an old scroll where a message was written on it, and then one message was scraped off of the scroll so it could be reused. And then another message was written onto the scroll after that. So you could possibly see bits of the first message while you're reading the second message. This is something that could mean other things than cryptography. It could mean, with history research, of course, a city could be a palimpsest. Like if you're in Rome and you're standing on a street corner in Rome, you might see modern office buildings around you, and you could see the Colosseum from Roman times. You could also see medieval churches. So you're seeing parts of the old history that are showing through to modern days. That's a palimpsest. All right, so using those two keyword systems, part one of crypto starts up here with the EMUFPHC line, EMUFPHC up there at the top. And what you do is you take the tableau with the keywords of cryptos and then palimpsest going down here. And then you put the E on the first line and then the M on the second line, the U, the F, the P. And then you trace up. So an E becomes a B, an M becomes an E, a U becomes a T, you know, this becomes a W. And so EMUFPHC becomes BETWEEN, between. It's the first word of the plain text. And you keep going and you keep repeating the word palimpsest over and over, and you can pull out the entire plain text of part one that way. And this is the ciphertext. This is the text from cryptos. And then using the keys of cryptos and palimpsest, you come up with the plain text, which is between subtle shading and the absence of light lies the nuance of illusion. Now it says occlusion there with a Q. It's not a typo on my slide. That's actually the way that it decrypts. Now, I've asked Sanborn about that because eventually he called me up and he said, "Who are you and why do you have a website about me?" And we got talking. And now I've visited him. I've seen his studio. We get together for dinner once every couple of years. We have a dinner coming up, actually, I think in October of this year. If anyone's in D.C. and wants to come, let me know. We'll have other cryptos researchers there, too. So I'd asked him about that typo or the Q, and I said, "Is it a typo? Was it just a mistake?" And he says, "No, it was deliberate. But it's not what it is. It's where it is that's important." Don't know what that means. That's what he said. So maybe he's giving us a clue. Maybe he's just trying to do more misdirection at this point. He's told other people that sometimes a spelling error could be put into something as a way of making it more difficult to solve. It's also possible that he did just make a mistake, because he did make mistakes in other parts of the sculpture. So part two starts at the third line here, goes all the way to the bottom of this plate. Uses the same system, visionaire, but with two different keywords. Also, this is one where he did admit that there was a mistake. This was just a few years ago, but he said that down here there was a letter that was supposed to be on the sculpture that he'd not put in because he was just trying to condense things for aesthetic reasons, not realizing that it was going to totally change what the last part of the code was going to say. So what it should have done when he created cryptos, there should have been an extra S down there. So, but using the different keywords instead of cryptos and palimpsest, cryptos and abscissa. Abscissa is a mathematical term, means the x-coordinate on a graph. Using those two keys, we get to the plain text of it was totally invisible. How is that possible? They use the Earth's magnetic field, X. The information was gathered and transmitted underground, and here's another place where there was a deliberate mistake there, to an unknown location, X. Does Langley know about this? They should. It's buried out there somewhere. X. Who knows the exact location? Only WW. This was his last message. X. 38 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north, 77 degrees, 8 minutes, 44 seconds west, ID by Rose. The ID by Rose is the last part where things kind of got mangled because of that missing letter. by shifting things, it was just total chance, according to Sanborn, that it came out to something that looked like English. What it should have been is, if we put that extra S there, it shifts everything and all the letters change to where it actually says X layer 2, which isn't a whole lot more clear, but this is what Sanborn said it's supposed to say. Those two dots that I pointed out would be right about here. They would, you know, only WW, so it's possible that the dots were meant for the initials of someone. There was a lot of speculation about what WW means, and Dan Brown was actually speculating that it was upside down for MM and it secretly meant Mary Magdalene. And Sanborn said, absolutely not. And he was infuriated that Dan Brown was trying to appropriate his work. So Sanborn actually went public and said WW means William Webster, who was the director of the CIA at the time that the sculpture was installed and was one of the people instrumental in getting more art around the building. The coordinates, I'll be showing you more about where those point to. They point to a location near Kryptos, but not specifically at Kryptos, where it says the 6.5 seconds north is interesting because it's not 6 seconds north, it's not 7 seconds north, it's 6.5 seconds north. And anyone here that's done geocaching, you know that a tenth of a second of latitude is a very specific location. It's about 10 feet across. So for him to say 0.5 seconds, that's really kind of nailing it down to a 50-foot area. The coordinates point to an area about 150 feet southeast of the Crypto sculpture. I didn't know exactly where to look when I was there, but we've had other people who've gotten on site to CIA, and they've said they've gone there. They don't see anything unusual. It's just part of a landscaped courtyard. So it's possible, we don't know. It doesn't mean that there's something buried there. It's kind of difficult to go to CIA with a shovel and say, can I start digging in your garden? Or maybe there's also office space under there. Maybe there's something hidden in ceiling tiles of an office somewhere. Or maybe it's meant to be like an equilateral triangle, like Kryptos here and the coordinates here, and maybe there's something at another point. We don't know.
Question about the location.
Okay.
I wondered if maybe he intended to exactly pinpoint the location of Kryptos and he just got the location wrong.
It's possible. Anything's really possible. But when I've talked to Sanborn and I've asked him kind of about that, and he was very, very specific that he knew exactly what he was doing because there was a local United States Geological Service benchmark there, and that while other construction was going on, and he saw that and he used things to measure very precisely. And I've showed him my slides of where we think it points to, and he always has always seemed to be kind of okay on that. Granted, it might be more misdirection, and like he has made mistakes, but I've given him he knows where we think it points to, and he's never said, oh, I meant it to point to Kryptos. So take that for what you will. Okay. Good question. Okay. So part three of Kryptos starts at the top of this plate, goes down to about the fourth line from the bottom here. Note also that there's some letters that are slightly out of alignment here, and I'll talk a little bit more about those. Part three is a different kind of cryptographic system. Instead of the substitution that we have with Visionaire, this is actually a transposition system. So if you look, you'll see lots of E's and T's, lots of vowels. So all of the letters of the message are here. They're just scrambled up in a different way. And one way to take it apart is if you take all those letters and you put them into these nice even rows, and you start over here in the middle where there's an S, and then you count down by four. One, two, three, four, and you get to an L. Then count down another four, you get to an O. Count down another four, you get to a W. Keep going, L, Y. So S, L, O, W, L, Y, slowly. And that's your first plain text. And you can pull out, just keep following those diagonals, you can pull out the entire message that way. Slowly, desperately. So the plain text of part three is slowly, desperately, slowly, the remains of passage debris that encumbered the lower part of the doorway was removed. With trembling hands, I made a tiny breach in the upper left-hand corner. And then, widening the hole a little, I inserted the candle and peered in. The hot air escaping from the chamber caused the flame to flicker, but presently details of the room within emerged from the mist. X. Can you see anything? Q. Which, as you saw from the video, this is a paraphrased extract from the diary of Howard Carter, November 26, 1922, the day that he discovered King Tut's tomb. these X's scattered through it. Sanborn has said, he's not really clear on this, but he says that they're basically meant as a punctuation, so that the XQ, the Q could mean a question mark, might mean something else, we don't know, but that's his explanation for these spacers. Sometimes you want a code where the lines are going to be exactly even, so you'll put in a few extra letters to make it work out like that. Then there's part four, 97 characters here at the end. Can't tell you what it says because we don't know. There's been a lot of work done on it, a lot of things pointed out about it, like there's doubled letters, and the letters cryptos are in there. For example, you know, here at the top of this line we have K and R, and then you have YP over here, and you have a T over there, and OS, so you have cryptos there. We don't know. It's people have been working on it for 20 years. So why hasn't it been solved yet? Well, one reason, it's very short. And generally, when we're cracking codes, we have a lot of stuff to work with. It's also possible that there's something on CIA grounds that you need to get at. Cryptos was never intended as a public challenge. It was intended as a challenge to the employees at the CIA. So maybe you need to go in and you need to look at a painting of a previous chairperson, or you need to go see something that's laid into the floor work in the main lobby. We don't know. That's one of the possibilities. It's possible we've just missed something we don't know about. We may have been misdirected. He may have said, oh, well, you need to go look at this, and actually we don't need to look at that. And it's possible he just screwed it up then. There's a mistake, and it just makes it unsolvable. But he's adamant that he's sure it's done right. He did come in and say that there was a mistake in part two. So he's gone back and looked at his work. When I've gone out with him and bought him drinks, tried to get him talking, I've also gone out with Ed Scheidt, the chairman of the CIA Cryptographic Center, who taught cryptographic systems to Sanborn. And Scheidt has given different answers about whether or not he knows what part four says. Sometimes he says he knows it. Sometimes he says he doesn't know it. Sometimes he says, I'll just let Jim talk for that. Sometimes he says that he designed the systems that were used. But I've really gotten on Ed's case and saying, are you sure you know that it was done right? And how do you know that there isn't a mistake? How do you know that it's even solvable? And he pounded, and he leaned across, and he looked at me and said, I'm sure it's done right. So I'm pretty sure that he knows what it says. So I don't think that it's unsolvable because of an error, but I think there's some sort of different methods that are possibly used that just make it really complex. So I'll talk briefly about the Cyrillic projector. This was something that Sanborn created after Cryptos. He created it for gallery shows, and then it was sold to the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. We started looking at it in 2003. We had someone, again, from Dragon Con, someone named Randall Bullock. Is Randall here? Sometimes he comes
in. No, he's at Burning Man.
Oh, he's at Burning Man. Damn him. Okay. But Randall went out to take pictures of the sculpture and got a lot of very detailed images, sent them to me. I sent them along to the group. I said, let's make a transcript. As it turned out, there was some miscommunications, and three of us made our own independent transcripts, but that was actually good because now we had three independent transcripts that we could compare to make sure that we had one hyper-accurate transcript. And I put that on the web and shared it. And then we all kind of had other things that we were working on at the same time. And then I found out that I was reading my weblogs, because I'm really kind of curious as to who links to my website. And I was, as I was reading my weblogs, I saw that someone was linking to me from an Earthlink site with a web page where it was called cpsolution.htm. And I thought, that's an intriguing web page to be linking to me. And I went and looked at it, and someone, they hadn't totally solved it, but they'd come up with a method of a visionaire method of using some of the Russian and coming up with something that looked like a jumbled mess of Russian text, but they couldn't read it because it was all mashed together and there were spelling errors. And so then the race was on, who can come up with the first English transcript of what's on the Cyrillic projector. So I'm on the phone with people trying to find someone who's a native Russian speaker, and a Cryptos group is trying to find people as well. And we finally did come up with someone. This was the mass of Russian text. Does anyone here read Russian? Anyone? Yeah, it's really difficult to decipher a language that you don't know, especially when there's no word breaks, when there's spelling errors in there. This is not what it says, but this is an example of the problem. And so this mass says, this sentence might be easily understandable to a native English speaker, but someone not familiar with English would have a great deal of trouble reading or translating it. plus the fact that there isn't any punctuation isn't any help either. So because we can read English, we can sort of puzzle it out. But someone, a Russian speaker, it would just be a massive text. They'd have a lot of trouble with. And that was the problem that we had when we were looking at this massive Russian text. But we found someone, my father knew someone who'd been an engineer in the Soviet Union before it broke up, and Anatoly. And I got in touch with Anatoly, and Anatoly came up with a translation, and then we could put word breaks, and we figured out what it said. We did press release, and it got huge international attention. And I won't read the entire thing, but what the text came out to be was from two different documents. And one of them was instructions to Secret Service agents on how to develop sources and how you want to psychologically control a source. Because if you can control someone, then you know you can trust the information that you're getting from them, which is kind of a scary concept, but this was instructions on how to do it. And then the other section was from a letter in the KGB document that was talking about the Soviet dissident Sakharov and concerns that the KGB had that Sakharov was going to be speaking at the Pugwash conference and the Americans might be using Sakharov's statements for an anti-Soviet agenda, and they were debating should we have Sakharov kind of taken care of, make him disappear. And this came from a classified KGB document. Now, how do I know it came from a classified KGB document? Because that document that I'd gotten in the Smithsonian folder, this was the source document for what was on the Cyrillic projector. And so then the question is, how did Sanborn encrypt something into a sculpture that was from a classified KGB document? And what had happened, is, as we trace it all back, is that when the Soviet Union was breaking up, there were various KGB agents that were defecting to the United States, and one of them came in, and before he came, he'd gone through the files at the KGB and had copied a bunch of documents, so shoved them into briefcases, and then took the briefcases with him to the United States, saying, I want asylum, here's my gift to you, can I come to the United States? And then these documents were collected, and they were passed along to the Library of Congress and to the Smithsonian, I believe. And Sanborn, the artist, his father, was the director of exhibitions for the Library of Congress, which meant that Sanborn had access to all of this information in the Library of Congress. So he saw this document, thought it was really cool, took it, encrypted it, and put it into the sculpture that's now sitting in University of North Carolina, Charlotte, which had classified KGB information. He just thought it would be kind of cool to do that. So that's kind of the whole story of how that went there. And also he put it, he liked the idea of Antipodes, the one at the Hirshhorn Museum with the two sides. On one side you have text that's encrypted, that's CIA, and on the other side you have text that's encrypted from the KGB. And he liked that juxtaposition of having encrypted text from the Cold War, from the CIA and the KGB on the same sculpture. And this is where it came from, and it would say about the Soviet, the third word there is Sakharov, and then that's the actual text that was encrypted onto the sculpture. And that was secret. That's the one that I saw that made me call the FBI. All right. And then, just kind of a joke, when there's a website called slashdot.org, and the news about the Cyrillic projector went out to there, and slashdot has a very irreverent style when they're talking about things, and we said, and here's what the solution is. And they said, nah, we'll tell you what the solution really is. And there were a lot of joke solutions, and my two favorites. One was is that, no, what the Cyrillic projector really says is, send more vodka. And the other one says, no, what the Cyrillic projector really says is, keep information away from moose and squirrel. Okay. So we use this information, especially with all the spelling errors in the Russian, and we're looking at the Cyrillic projector to see, okay, well, maybe we could learn something by where the mistakes are. We haven't really, though there are some interesting things, and I'll be talking about one of them here. One of the reasons we're looking for mistakes is to see if maybe there's some clue, or maybe one of the reasons that Kryptos hasn't been solved is because there's something on the sculpture itself that we need to see. And we found that the Cyrillic projector possibly did have something like that. And I got a little bit out of order, but let me talk a little bit more about Kryptos, then I'll talk a little bit more about the Cyrillic projector. The latitude and longitude on Kryptos are pointing to a location that's right about here. So the original CIA headquarters building, this was there up to the 80s. Then they decided they needed a new headquarters building. So they they commissioned this building. And along with commissioning this building, they decided that they wanted art to go around the building. And so that's how Sanborn got the gig. And Kryptos is right about here, next to the cafeteria. So again, this white building with the funny shaped roof, that's the cafeteria. Kryptos is about here. Sanborn designed Kryptos. He also designed this courtyard area. There's a duck pond right about there. He also designed some pieces out here in the front entrance area. Okay, here's another angle. So again, we have Kryptos, courtyard, duck pond, and then some pieces out here. The pieces out here are these large granite slabs. They're about a foot thick that are kind of tilted out of the ground, sort of like a geologic seam. And they also have plates of copper with Morse code messages that are in between them. Sanborn said he wanted these to be like the pages of a book. And they say things like SOS, shadow forces, lucid memory, T is your position. And there's also an engraved compass rose where a needle is pointing towards a magnetic rock, a lodestone. We found some ways that these may tie in to part two of Kryptos, and there's lots of speculation on that. And we've also kind of looked at where these things are and the angle, the lines of where things are. We think that the coordinates point to about here. So Kryptos is about 150 feet away. So it's possible that if we're looking at the diagonal here and the diagonal here, that the coordinates mean we need to go to something in relation to this diagonal. So maybe we need to go look around here. There's also a little block right here, a little triangle block, which doesn't have any Morse code, and maybe it's meant to be in some way connected to the coordinates. We just don't know. There's just all this speculation that's going on. We'd love to really kind of go out there and see, you know, where's the compass pointing and all those things. This is the triangle block. Maybe it's related. Maybe that's meant to be the answer. We don't know. We don't know. I have shown this stuff to Sanborn, and he just gets his Sphinx look on him and won't give us any information. These letters that were out of alignment, Sanborn has said that these are important, but we don't know why he said that. So we've looked a lot into, you know, what are those letters, which ones are raised, which ones are not raised. The letters YAR are raised. Maybe you spell them backward. You have the word ray. Maybe it has something to do with the way that light is projecting. There's been a lot of research that's gone into these different theories. Right. Also, we noticed that on this side where the Visionaire tableau is, there's an extra L. If you go down this line, it should be E-F-G-H-I, and this should be J, should be the last letter here, but it's actually an L. So there's two lines that end with the same letter. Maybe that's deliberate. Maybe it's not. We don't know. But this line with the extra L, if you follow it across to the other side of the sculpture, it's the same line where there's those raised letters, Y-A-R. So maybe it's meant by Sanborn to kind of draw the eye to that part of the sculpture. Again, not sure. So this is coming back to what I was talking about with the Cyrillic projector. And this is a discovery that was actually made by John Wilson, who we met at DragonCon, is actually sitting there in the back, comes to my talks regularly, and has done a lot of research, also has his own Kryptos website. And he noticed that on the Cyrillic projector, there were two keys that were used, and the words were Russian. One was Tien and one was Medusa. And if you're visiting the sculpture at night and there's a light in the center of the sculpture and it's beaming all this text, and if you look, you can see the word Medusa is actually being beamed on one of these lines. And to anyone who knows a little bit about the Cyrillic alphabet, this is going to jump out a bit because some of these letters don't exist in the Cyrillic alphabet. There's no D, or it's a different character. There's no S in the Cyrillic alphabet. So these would show up to someone who knew what they were looking for. So this word Medusa, and if you change it to Medusa, that became one of the keys. Where did it come from on the sculpture? Well, it came from this third line on that plate. And if you go and you look in the daytime, and John figured this out, on that third line, there's actually something, there's an extra bolt that is right there on that line. And it's a little bit difficult to see from this side, but if you're looking from the other side, looking on the inside of the sculpture, it's very clear that there's an extra bolt there. And it's the only bolt like that on the entire sculpture. So maybe Sanborn put it there as a way of drawing the eye and saying there's some sort of clue on this line. I've showed this slide to Sanborn about the extra bolt, and he looked a little nervous, and he said, "Oh, I just put the bolt there because the plates were starting to come apart a little bit, and it just needed some you know, structural strengthening." But there's no other bolts like that anywhere on the entire sculpture. So take it for what it will. Maybe it's good. So maybe Kryptos, if we had researchers who could go in and just really look at the sculpture as carefully as John was looking at the Cyrillic projector, we might find something. Maybe if we look at the way the letters are carved, and they're carved into these thick metal plates, maybe some of them are carved rough and some are smooth. So it might be rough, rough, smooth, smooth, rough. Maybe there's a Morse code message or some key. We don't know. There's just all these different things that we might find if we could take a closer look at the sculpture. So I've also talked a great deal to Ed Scheid about it. He said that part four is different, that we solved the first three parts because we had the keys, but he did things to mask the English in part four. He said he used a little bit of stego, a little bit of steganography in part four. We've talked about duress ciphers, but he has confirmed part four is solvable, that it's in English, that all the letters are used. Now, Sanborn finally did give another hint about Porpor. This is new, because this came in November of 2010. And it was kind of the 20 years that the sculpture had been around, and Sanborn was kind of trying to nudge us along. And this made international news. It was in the New York Times here in the States and many other places. And he said he's going to give us one part of what it says. And he says that in part four, where we have the letters NYPVTT, he says that the actual plain text at that location is the word Berlin, or the letters Berlin. So we're doing conference calls, we're working on it. We don't know what this means, but it's something new and it's something very intriguing. And some of the things that we've been looking at, okay, well, does it mean Berlin? Does it mean because the CIA was in Berlin and there were a lot of Berlin-related stories? Or maybe it's a combination of words. Maybe it's not Berlin, maybe it's, you know, like if you have amber line, you can get the word Berlin. Maybe, you know, a number of links and you could get Berlin there. Maybe it's not a single word, maybe it's part of a word, like Berliner, you know, Ich bin ein Berliner, Berlin Wall, West Berlin, East Berlin. We're trying all different ways of saying, well, if we knew that this was Berlin and maybe the letters before it mean West, or maybe the letters after it mean tunnel, and then trying to see if that helps us crack the code. And again, lots of speculation, but nothing solid. We haven't figured anything else out in part four. So now another theory with here is that Berlin, right around the time that Sanborn was creating Kryptos, was right around the time that the Berlin Wall was coming down. And so the Berlin Wall fell in November 89, Kryptos was dedicated in 1990 at Sanborn. It took him a couple years to create Kryptos. So it's possible that Sanborn knew that pieces of the Berlin Wall were going to be given to the CIA for a CIA monument. And there is indeed a Berlin Wall CIA monument right now. It was dedicated at the CIA in December 1992. Maybe Sanborn knew something about that, hid something there. Maybe he knew that the plans were for it to be in the central courtyard, and that's why the latitude and longitude coordinates point there. He was pointing to the location of what he thought the Berlin Wall monument was going to be, but then it wasn't, and it was actually placed somewhere else. If you look, again, we have the original headquarters building, new headquarters building. The current location of the Berlin Wall monument is here, but maybe Sanborn thought that it was going to be here. We don't know. Just lots of speculation going on that. So, wrapping up, Sanborn has many other sculptures around the world. Some are encrypted. He did not do anything with text until Kryptos. Kryptos started a text phase of his career. But he's also done things now with the binary code. He's done things that do a lot of, he repeats themes with projection of light and the sculptures that use quotes from an economist named Adam Smith. Maybe these are clues, maybe not, we don't know. This is something that he's done at the IRS, is a bench with a bunch of, I hope, fake Social Security numbers. He would go out into the desert where there were large mountain rock structures, and he would beam. This is not computer graphics here. This is actually, he beamed a square of light onto this mountain and then did a time-lapse photograph of it. You can actually see the star trails here in the background. This is at the university in Connecticut. So we have text from Adam Smith, and then we have binary text that's around here. This sculpture, I believe, is called Circulating Capital. So this idea of him projecting light through things, maybe it has something to do with Kryptos. Maybe we need to stand somewhere and shine a flashlight through it. Or we've tried making 3D models and showing where the sun is, and just all kinds of different things we're looking at. He also designed the decor at this restaurant in Washington, D.C. It's the Zola Spy Restaurant. It's next door to the International Spy Museum. If you ever have a chance in D.C., go to this museum. It's a lot of fun. And one of the walls here is a series of classified documents, which he got, I believe, through his father at the Library of Congress. And these are documents in English and Russian and French that he's put in sheet protectors that are all hanging in this wall. And one of the documents is the same as that document that I got in the Smithsonian folder. So the source document that solves the code for the Cyrillic projector is hanging on the wall in this restaurant. And if he did that before the Cyrillic projector was solved, maybe the source document for solving cryptos is also hanging in this restaurant as well. We don't know. So we're really looking at a lot of the decor there. A pop culture, very briefly about the Da Vinci Code. Two of those puzzles refer to cryptos. One is that little tear. It has very tiny text that says, "Only WW knows." Dan Brown put that there. And another is on the back, light red on dark red. There's, I don't know if you can see in this light, but it's latitude and longitude coordinates, 37 degrees, 57 minutes, 6.5 seconds north. Now, crypto says 38 degrees, not 37 degrees. And I've asked Dan Brown, I said, you know, crypto says 38 and you put 37. And he said, yeah, the discrepancy is intentional. And at one point, I was talking to Dan Brown's editor, Jason Kaufman, and I said, hey, you know, when you guys published the book, and in the book jacket, you know, it says 37 degrees, 57, you know, it's actually 38 on cryptos. He says, yeah, the discrepancy is intentional. So they have their stories very well aligned on that. But even knowing that, now that I've read Lost Symbol, I still have no idea why he put 37 on Da Vinci Code instead of 38. I don't know what it has to do with Lost Symbol. So maybe this is a clue to another Dan Brown novel. I don't know. Yeah, I told you about that. This was just something cute. Someone I know built a 3D model of Kryptos in a Half-Life engine just so they could take a crowbar to it and shatter it into 1,000 pieces. I sympathize with that. So if you want more information about Kryptos, of course, I have a little bit about Kryptos here. My website is there's a lot of information there. John Wilson, he has a lot of information on his site. You're welcome to write to me. You're welcome to join the Kryptos group. And as long as people just join and stay constructive, the more people, the better. I believe that Kryptos will be solved not necessarily by just a fine cryptographic mind, because we've had the college-educated crypto folks working on it for 20 years, haven't cracked it. I believe that there's going to be some idea that's going to come in out of left field, and that's going to help us to crack the codes. I think the more brains that they have working on it, the better. I've also written two articles about cryptos in this book, The Secrets of the Lost Symbol, which is about the fact and fiction of Dan Brown's novel. And so, summary. So Kryptos, four codes. Three of the four have been solved. Fourth is one of the most famous unsolved codes in the world. Why hasn't it been solved? Well, it's short. It might be screwed up, possibly. Maybe there's a clue that something on CIA grounds that we just don't have access to. But both Jim Sanborn and Ed Scheidt have said that it is solvable. My goal is not to solve it necessarily to solve it myself. I want to see it solved. And if I can help with that process by sharing as much information as I can, I will do so. Happily do so. If anyone wants to help, we could use linguists to help translate some of Sanborn's sculptures, more 3D modelers, and anyone who has access to CIA that might be in this room, or someone who knows someone who has access to CIA, I have a list of things that you can go look at. It'd be nice to have someone in there with firsthand observations. So, any questions? Yes. Microphone? Do we have? Okay.
I was just wondering if Sanborn has the answer in his will, just in case.
Yeah, good question. I've talked to Sanborn about that, and his first thing is he says he wants to die knowing that Kryptos is unsolved, to which some of the members of my group say, okay, we can make that happen. But Sanborn has put the answer to Kryptos. He's done something creative. How do you share the answer with someone without letting them have access to the answer where they could then kind of put it out into the world? So what he's done is he's put the answer into two different safe deposit boxes in different parts of the United States. And two members of his extended family, his girlfriend Jay, a Korean artist, and a member of his extended family, I believe in New Mexico, they each have keys to this safe deposit box. And they have something that's called the K4 test. So if someone were to go to Jay and say, hey, I've solved part four, then Jay is supposed to ask this person, okay, well, what is the 27th letter? What is the 75th letter? And if this person answers enough of these tests correctly, then she will go to the safe deposit box and get the actual answer and be able to prove it that way. However, if someone really does solve it, there will be I don't think that would necessarily that would have to be necessary, because if someone could solve it, they would have a method for how they solve it. They could share that method with other people, and then if other people could verify the solution, we'd know. We'd be able to verify that it was a real answer. But there's no plans for him to actually, to my knowledge, he has no plans to say, okay, here's the solution. He gave us that hint, and maybe we'll get another hint in 5 years. I don't know.
Do we know it's not solved at Langley?
Do we know it's not solved at Langley? I'm pretty sure it's not solved at Langley or at NSA. There was someone, Jim Galogli, who was on the video, did solve it. When he made his solution, Langley came forward and said, well, we have someone that has also solved those first three parts, a man named David Stein, who did it on his own time. But Stein, again, had only solved the first three parts and not the fourth part. I give talks periodically at the NSA Cryptologic History Symposium, so I meet people from the CIA, from the NSA. And there are people at the NSA who are actually kind of pissed off that part four isn't solved yet. And it's almost it's sort of an insult. In fact, the director of the CIA at one time kind of threw down the gauntlet to the director of the NSA. So you guys think you're so hot, let's see you solve Kryptos. And so they actually, NSA put together a team and sicked the computers of the NSA on Kryptos. This was in 1992, and they were only able to solve the first three parts. They didn't solve the fourth part either. If it would have happened in the real world or real cryptographic work, what it would have been marked as is needs more collection, meaning we have a very short message here. We need more messages with this system to be collected by our spies, and then we might be able to crack it. So that's what I've been told. It's possible that someone solved it and dropped it in a drawer, but you know, you can't really disprove that either. Any other questions? Okay. So again, just summary. I want as many people as possible to look at Kryptos. Also, a takeaway from this is when people tell you no, as I was told no many times, sometimes by large guys with guns, don't let that be the final no. You keep trying. Maybe there's another way you can get in. So being persistent can be a good thing as well. Just keep your thought of what your goal is. Keep telling people what your goals are, like if you happen to be at a hacker con and there might be an undercover CIA agent at the con, and you'd be surprised that the world may help you to achieve your goals. So thank you very much for coming.